At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Okay, what is going on? We just had another story of an airplane's landing gear falling onto a golf course, this time in Maine. So no one was hurt. It landed on the seventh hole on the fairway. And I just want to know, we're seeing more and more reports of airplane parts falling from the sky. And I don't like it. Yeah, I'm going to go on record right now. I don't like it. Now, the plane, realizing that, we're missing some landing gear. So they turned around and they went back to the airport that they flew out of in New York. And they landed belly landing. You know, obviously they had to without the landing gear. And I just want to know. I mean, we have reports not long ago of the tire that went landed between the houses, right? The guy, you know, just landed. I heard some noise and it looked like one of those airplane wheels between the houses. I mean, they're lucky. And then when you look at you go to Google and I just looked up airplane part falls between houses. But remember the United Airlines plane parts that fell into the front yard of that home? That isn't just a small single engine Piper Cub flying over your home. That's a big jetliner falling with stuff falling from the sky. So it's a little scary. And planes are everywhere. I mean, I live in DFW and we have, I don't know if you know this, but it's quite a large metropolitan area, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. And there's several large airports where large planes fly in and out of. Now, I'm not familiar with parts crashing down in neighborhoods here at DFW. They have had crashes before. It's been quite some time. But if parts are going to start flying off of airplanes, perhaps we need to do some preventive maintenance on these airlines. Just a thought from Chewing the Fat. You're welcome. Welcome. Welcome to Chewing the Fat. So I know we're supposed to be optimistic, and I'm trying to be optimistic here on Chewing the Fat. Well, you know, a little optimistic anyway. But, you know, every day we get beaten down with stories. And it's very frustrating. Now, I know, you know, I was joking around about airplane parts falling from the sky. I mean, we have thousands of flights flying over our head every day. And so, the percentage of parts falling from the sky are very small. So, you're probably going to be okay. You probably don't have to worry about an engine falling on your garage. I know that. But American Airlines has now said that, you know, we're going to have to probably add some stops to certain flights because, there's fuel delivery delays. And so they were asking the pilots to save fuel whenever possible. Let me ask you, how do pilots save fuel? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, if I want to save fuel, I don't drive somewhere, right? Or I make sure that my automobile is at the top of its game performance-wise. I don't know how the pilot does that. That's not up to the pilot, right? I mean, does the pilot decide, I'm just going to turn the key off for a little while. Yeah, we're sitting on the tarmac. Don't worry about it. I'm just shutting off all the engines, and we're going to park here for a little bit. Yeah, we're going to try to open up some windows, and oh, no, we can't? Yeah, no, the windows don't open. Oh, well, don't worry about it. So there's a jet fuel delivery problem. I don't know what that problem is, but we need to get that fixed. So I guess some airlines said flights are going to carry additional fuel to airports affected by shortages. That'll go over well. That's what we want. We want the airlines weighted down with a few extra 100 gallons of fuel flying over our heads. I don't know. I'm not sure what the deal is, but then Delta said, yeah, well, we've seen some fuel delay issues at some of the smaller Western airports, but hasn't really had any problems. Oh, okay. Southwest, we don't have any. We haven't had any disruptions because of fuel issues. Yeah, it could be fine. You know, we could turn into tankering if needed. Oh, so that's what they're saying. We're going to turn into tankering. We're going to load up our planes with extra jet fuel and have them land at these smaller airports and just drop off the jet fuel there. Okay. I mean, I'm not sure how that goes over well with everyone, you know, wanting to fly places. The numbers are going up. You look at the TSA turnstile numbers. As of yesterday, the 26th of July, so if you're listening live to this podcast, the show is the 27th of July, 2021, 2,124,474 through the turnstiles. And in 2019, they had 2,613,346. So while they're not back to pre-pandemic levels, they're pretty close. They're pretty close, especially when more and more areas are starting to go back into mandates and lockdowns, and the numbers seem to be going up as far as COVID-19. So, I mean, they're pretty close. And now you're telling me that there's a jet fuel shortage and it's going to start affecting some flights. If I can't just hop on a plane and wear a mask like you, man, I have to wear a mask on the plane, and I have to make sure that I'm dressed right. I can't wear my mini skirt, and I have to make sure that I'm properly dressed, and I have to make sure that I properly say hello and goodbye and thank you for doing the best job you can for us, and we really appreciate you helping us as we fly on your airline, and we act like good little sheep, and we want to hop on your plane and fly to wherever we want to fly to. And now you're telling me, well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for flying Fisher Air, but we're running a little low on fuel. And, you know, the airport we're going to doesn't have any extra jet fuel. So we're going to land, and then we're going to kick you off, and you're going to hang out in the terminal for a while until we get another plane to land here with some extra fuel. And they're going to, you know, we're going to siphon it off of them onto our plane, and then we'll take off. So whenever that happens, we'll let you know. But until then, we're going to land, and you're going to be stuck at the terminal in Des Moines for the next few hours, okay? Okay, good. Thank you for flying, and don't you dare complain. I don't want to hear one complaint. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in Des Moines for the rest of your miserable life. Thank you for flying Fisher Air. All right. Good luck. God bless. You know, last week we talked to Phelan Meckler about his actions and what was going on with Hunter Biden. He's making the movie My Son Hunter. And you can even help by donating if you go to mysonhuntermovie.com. But he was, you know, he's made videos of giving Hunter a hard time at his home in Venice, although he moved out of there, and probably a lot because of Phelan being out in out by his house in a bullhorn. Some of the videos are really funny. And so anyway, and he was saying that he was thinking, I think he's down in Malibu. Well, it's confirmed that Hunter Biden did move to Malibu. They found him in this 3,000-square-foot, four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath home a mile away from the ocean. It was sold reportedly in 2019 for $3.34 million. It's listed for rent at $20,000 a month. Neighbors told TMZ that the house was crawling with Secret Service agents. One neighbor said that someone from the Secret Service approached him a few days back and asked if he'd be willing to rent out his house to them for a year. The neighbor politely declined. Neighbors, however, have not seen Hunter. They said he has pretty much kept to himself. Now, they're saying that he moved because he was, you know, living in Venice down by Phelan. And he had very little privacy. Yeah. They were people knew where he lived. Amazing. And now, you know, he just wants to make his art. So apparently, I guess he was just seen earlier this week enjoying a coffee in Malibu with a friend of his, sitting outside the Blue Bottle Coffee in the center of, you know, Malibu, where all the hoity-toits go and drink coffee. So he's part of the in crowd there in Malibu now. Just, he didn't want to be down there. Hey, you get down there on Venice. You don't want to be down there with those people. Wow. Are you sick or something? So we've got to talk to Phelan about that, see if he's going to go down to Malibu and try to, you know, find Hunter and go up to the front door and ask him some questions. But, you know, his artwork's going to be going up for sale pretty soon. And I can't wait to find out, you know, how much they're going to go for. It's reported between $50,000 and $500,000, between $25,000 and $100,000, maybe even $1 million. And they're saying they're not going to release who purchased it for transparency purposes, because we wouldn't want people to know, you know, who paid all that money to get to the president through Hunter. So, but there's nothing that stops the buyer from advertising that they bought artwork from Hunter. So unless they sign a deal, you know, when they purchase the artwork, that they can't say that they have Hunter artwork. But that goes against how much it's worth, right? I purchase a piece of something and I want to be able to say, hey, I own it and I bought it from this person for so much, and now that makes it worth this. That's just really weird. But I can't wait for all of that. So I have to talk to Phelan again and find out what is going on in the Hunter world. And don't forget, the movie, My Son Hunter, is going to be made by Phelan McLear and his wife, Anne. And it is looking like they're getting ready to film later this year. And they have reached a milestone in donations to help get this movie made. And you can help as well at you know, mysonhuntermovie.com. It's not, this time it's not a commercial. It's just me talking about Hunter Biden and making a move from down there in Venice with those lowlifes. Now living up in Malibu with the real people. And as long as we're talking about criminals, I see where the dating game killer died in prison. The serial killer died on death row of natural causes. That's what they said. He was 77 years of age. Remember, he appeared on the dating game, and that was the girl that was supposed to go out with him and felt really strange and weird about it. I can't remember if she went out with him or if she decided not to. Yeah, that's right. She met with him after he was on the dating game. He was already in the middle of his crime spree. He'd already killed and raped people, and he went on the dating game, Mr. Sure of himself. And she said she met with him in person and got this really strong visceral reaction, and I decided not to go on a date with him. I started to feel ill. He was acting really creepy. And according to the story, that's right. It said bachelor number two, Jed Mills, could barely stand to be next to him. He was creepy, definitely creepy. I couldn't stand to be near him. Wow. So, I mean, that's his, you know, the dating game killer, a little bit of his story. It is presumed that he is responsible for 130 murders, which would make him the most prolific serial killer in America. But I thought Samuel Little, who just died, was the most prolific serial killer in history. I mean Samuel Little is, they've got him for, I mean, I don't know how many for sure. I think he strangled, he says he killed 93 or more. And they've got him for at least 50, I think, if I remember right. Anyway, so I don't know, the dating game killer or Samuel Little? Who is the most prolific serial killer in America? The Battle of the Serial Killers might be a segment for Chewing the Fat, you know, at another time. Let's go to the break room. I need something cold to drink desperately, and hopefully it's as refreshing as it used to be. Oh, man. It's not bad. It's not bad. You thought I was still going to say that's good, didn't you? But it doesn't. It's not as refreshing. I don't know. I am a little disappointed in the Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. This is the new can, Zero Sugar. Now, more delicious. Just because it says so on the can, that doesn't necessarily make it so. One more. I mean, it's good because it's cold, and I love cold beverages, but it's not as, it doesn't have that refreshing. So it may be time to move on. I know. Okay, so there was a mom in Wichita Falls, Texas, that bought a portable basketball goal. We've all had them in our driveways and in our yard. You know, you fill the bottom with sand or water, or you put a brick on it and you have a backboard and a hoop, and that's where you play basketball. And the neighborhood kids come to your driveway or to your curb and you play basketball. Well, some of the fun times we had, I lived in a cul-de-sac, and the neighbor had a portable basketball hoop that was out on the one side. Everybody in the neighborhood shot hoops there. That was part of the deal. It was fun. And that's what she got it for. And she rolled it out to the curb in front of her home, and the kids would all play in the street. And, you know, if you live in the neighborhood, you drive by, you slow down if they're playing basketball, and the kids let you drive by and they get back to their game. That's the way it goes. It's part of being in the neighborhood. Well, she got a letter from the city saying, you are in violation of unlawful placement of a basketball goal in a public right-of-way between the sidewalk and the curb or on a public street. Now, she doesn't have any sidewalks, and the picture of her there is, you know, the house and the yard goes right up to the curb, and that's where the basketball hoop is, off to the side of the driveway. It's right there in front of the house, so the kids would play, you know, out there in the road. And that's just, I mean, that's where you play. That's what happens. You shoot hoops out there, and that's what happens. So, by the way, I realize that she doesn't have any sidewalks, okay? The yard goes from, you know, the house to the curb. Now, I realize that that property is still part of the king's land as far as, you know, the old school thinking. You know, the city owns it. I got it. You are responsible to take care of it, but that's still our property from the center of the road to I don't know how many feet from the center of the road. So, I mean, it goes back into what you think is your yard. Yeah, it's not really your yard, but, you know, I digress. So she got two tickets in the mail. $440 each for the encroachment of easement. And she calls the city, and they said, oh, yeah, you got to move that. And she was like, I'm not moving the goal. It's where the kids in the neighborhood come to play. They shoot hoops there. I want to know where my kids and the kids in the neighborhood are, and we can all get along. And even probably some of the adults come out and shoot. Some of the dads come out. And you may even have a game once in a while with the dads and the sons. It's fun. That's part of the deal. It doesn't hurt a thing. So I guess someone in the neighborhood didn't like it. So, you know, that's what happens. I can't take those kids down there. The pounding of that basketball on the street at all hours of the day. I'm trying to take a nap, okay? So now she's got tickets and fines, and she went before the judge, and she said, I told the judge as long as it is fully portable goal, it can be moved and is not an obstruction in any way, should there, you know, should not be an issue. We need to fight for our kids. They depend on us. Yeah. So she presented herself. She went in front of city council, and they said, yeah, okay, go ahead. You're going to keep it up. No problem. Well, yeah, and good for you for fighting back instead of just taking it. I would have as well. That is agonizing that someone were to complain about that. So good for this mom in Wichita Falls, Malik Young. No, her name is Carrie Hill. Who's Malik Young anyway? Oh, he's one of the kids in the picture. He's one of the kids. They got a picture of all the kids there. It's not Malik Young. Carrie Hill is the mom who fought for the basketball goal and won against the stupid Wichita Falls. And it really isn't stupid Wichita Falls, right? They have a thing where you can't, you know, they obviously, that's why she got the ticket, because of, you know, an unlawful placement of a basketball goal in a public right of way. Between the sidewalk and the curb or on a public street, you can keep that in your driveway way back up there if you want. But, well, we don't want you out here by the curb where the kids can play in the street. It's dangerous out there. Is it? Is it? When you look at the street, it's a, you know, it's quite a long street. So cars are coming down the street. They see what's happening in the neighborhood. And I'm guessing, and I don't know, but I'm guessing that the people driving down the street live in the neighborhood. So they know, hey, there's the Hill House. They've got the basketball hoop. Oh, my gosh, there it is. I can see it. And, in fact, somebody needs to buy her a new one. I want her to buy a new one because they need a bigger backboard. It's one of the cheaper models with the smaller backboard. So, and she needs a new net on this thing, too. She needs a, I mean, it's still out there. The kids are having fun with it, but let's do a little upgrade, Carrie. What are you doing? All right, so at the time of this recording of Chewing the Fat, we are looking at the Olympic medal count. Japan has the most gold medals with 10, the home country. The United States and China both have 9 gold medals as we speak. So those are the top three right there, Japan, United States, and China. Now, the most medals total, the USA has 25. China has 21. Japan has 18. I know. So and then you go down. I see where Italy actually has 12 total medals. Well, they got a lot of silver and bronze. 1 gold. Whatever. Good luck, Italy. But then I see, so there's your medal count, quick medal count there. The top 10. You're looking at, you know, Germany 10, France 9th, Canada 8th, Australia 7th, South Korea 6th, Great Britain 5th, Russia 4th, then China, United States, and Japan. And those are the gold medal rankings. And so, you know, that's where we're at the limits. Then I see where Simone Biles, probably one of the greatest gymnasts of all time from the United States. She said that she had a medical issue and she lost the gold for her team. I mean, that's a, I don't know what kind of non-medical issue she had, because the USA Gymnastics cited it as a medical issue, but she said that it was not physical. She said she just needed to take a back seat and work on her mindfulness. No problem, Simone. Maybe you ought to do that another time. You know, when the Olympics aren't on. How about that, Simone? I mean, you're in the middle of the Olympics for a week and you need a mental break? Come on now. Stop it. That is agonizing. I get it. She's struggling. Okay. We had, you know, the past and everything that's going on, whatever. But really, that's where I'm at. Whatever. I get it. You know, you've already been there. You're already there. You already passed it. And now you're telling me you're at the Olympics and you need a time for mindfulness? No, Simone. No. And she's supposed to compete in another event on Thursday, and she said, we're going to see about Thursday. We're going to take it one day at a time. I know tomorrow we have a little bit of a break, so that'll be nice to have a mental rest day. And just my pride is hurt a little bit. It should be. That's ridiculous. In fact, the coach should just say, go home. I mean, we don't need you. Get out of here. If you're going to be that way, if you're going to take us to the Olympics and then have to take a mental break in the middle of the Olympics, no. Simone, no. Just go home. It looks as though it's going to be reported, it's being reported right now, that the CDC will announce that fully vaccinated Americans should return to wearing masks in indoor public settings due to the spread of the Delta variant. So there you have it. That is what's coming. And they are going to tell you that all kids need to wear a mask regardless of vaccinations at schools, and no matter whether you're vaccinated or not, you should wear a mask. So we are into panic porn, and it's getting to me too. I still have not been vaccinated, and I'm closer than ever to get vaccinated. I still follow the social distance rules, and I try not to go into crowded areas, but sometimes it can't be avoided. But I hate wearing the mask, and it's just agonizing to me. It really is. But that's where we're at, and I don't, is the mask going to, are people going to complain about it? Yes. Are they going to take to the streets? Doubtful. I mean, we talked yesterday how they're protesting in Europe over mandates and lockdowns. Are we going to protest this time? I don't know. Maybe we just don't do it, right? I mean, I think if they start locking down places and saying, you can't do this and you can't do that, maybe we take to the streets again, because enough is enough. America is just now, the world is just now trying to come back from this lockdown and treating people like they can't be with other people. And it's looking, everybody's on the same page. All the leaders are telling you, get vaccinated and we're going to lock down and we need these mandates. I mean, we had the governor of Alabama this morning. I'm doing Pat Unleashed every day. Tell us, we played the clip of the governor of Alabama saying we need to shame the unvaccinated. It's their fault. We need to blame them. It's their fault that people are getting the COVID-19. Really? I mean, we heard from a guy that called us from the great state of Montana today during Pat Unleashed that said he's a breakthrough case. Now, his family is sick with him, and they did not get vaccinated. So did they give it to him? It's their fault. He should blame his wife and children. I should have reminded him of that when he was on the phone. It's their fault. They made him sick. I mean, that's where we're at. So if everyone is vaccinated, then nobody can get sick. Oh, okay. Is that the way it works? Because I don't think it is. It's just me, but I don't think it is. So as of right now, it looks like more than 188.7 million have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 163.2 million are fully vaccinated. And according to this, the COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective at preventing COVID-19, especially severe illness and death. Okay. Now, they're not guaranteeing that you can't get COVID-19, although they said originally that it would make you less sick, all right, if you got COVID-19 after you got vaccinated. But well, we obviously know that you can still, it's not stopping the variants. And we also know that some of those breakthrough cases, if you were in one of the high risk age groups, which all those people in New Jersey were, that if you got the variant, have a nice day. We love you, but you're gone. So I'm questioning, I don't want to get it. And if I do get it, is it going to be terrible enough to, you know, make me kick the bucket? Do I get the vaccine? And then do I get less sick with the vaccine? Or does the vaccine make me sick? I don't know. I don't know. You can email me at chewingthefat@theblaze.com. Chewingthefat@theblaze.com. You can always email me and let me know your feelings on that. You can follow me on Twitter at JeffyJFR. Facebook and Instagram is Jeff Fisher Radio. I'm happy to hear your information. I might not like it, but I'm happy to hear from you anytime, anywhere. Even on my YouTube channel, Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher on YouTube. There's a place there for comments as well. And I see them. Oh, believe me. I see them. Now, are the door-to-door people going to convince me to get the vaccine? Probably not, because I don't want them coming to my front door. Hello? Yes, this is Anne and Mary, and we're here to talk to you about COVID-19 vaccines. No, thanks. We're busy. Take care. Sorry. Thanks for stopping. I know, but I am a community health advocate, and Mary here, that's your name, Mary, right? Yeah. She's a public health information specialist, so we can answer any of your questions that you might have. So can we come in, or can you open the door and talk to us? No, I can't. My power bill is through the roof. I'm not going to open my front door and let the cold air out. Or let the hot air in, whatever happens, you know, however that works, that costs me more money on my air conditioning. I can't do that. So, no, I'm not going to open my door. Thanks for coming. You can leave a card out there. I'll get it when I go to get the mail later, maybe, when I pick up my Amazon package. But that's it. Thanks for coming, Anne and Mary, even though you're, I don't know. And, you know, I got to thinking about the guy. I don't know. Maybe we talked about it. I don't remember. But I got to thinking about the story I told you about the guy I listened to who didn't get the vaccine, got really sick, and he was, you know, concerned for a day and a half to 2 days that he really was going to die. He was so sick. And he talked about getting diagnosed and being told he was positive, right? He had COVID-19. And the doc... He said the doc didn't have any medicine. He just told me to go home and that I had to ride it out. Wait, what? I mean, isn't there, he said, I mean, there are some treatments. There's hydroxychloroquine. There's ivermectin. I mean, are we just to believe that now, nope, you're not getting any of that. Have a nice day. You go home, take a little Tylenol. Good luck. God bless. Don't take any Advil, any ibuprofen. Just take some Tylenol, try to keep that fever down, and cough your ribs off, and good luck, God bless. Is that where we're at? We're to believe that that's where we're at? Because it sure sounded like it. That's what that guy said, that the doc just said, yeah, I got nothing for you. Go home, good luck. That doesn't sound like a good doctor. That's just me. I saw a report the other day where they show the doctor, she's telling everyone, the unvaccinated that come in sick, and she's telling them all, yep, it's too late. It's too late. You're tough. That doesn't sound like a good doctor to me. That sounds like maybe you're going against what you said you were supposed to do. Isn't that the Hippo oath that they take? Yeah, I think that's what it's called, too. I think it's called the Doctor's Hippocratic Oath. Pretty sure that's what it's called. So Robert Aaron Long, the Georgia man, accused of fatally shooting 8 people at 3 Atlanta area spas in March, just pled guilty to 4 of the killings in the Cherokee County courtroom. He pled guilty to the 4 counts of murder, and he was recommended that he get a life sentence. He was in handcuffs and shackles. He responded, yes, ma'am. He faces an additional 19 18 charges in nearby Fulton County, where prosecutors will be pursuing the death penalty for hate crimes targeting the sex and race of the victims. Remember in the spree killings on March 16th, Long opened fire at a spa about 30 miles outside of Atlanta in Cherokee County, and then two neighboring spas in northeast Atlanta. Those are the 19 charges still pending. He was arrested several hours later, about 150 miles south of Atlanta. Six of the eight victims were Asian women, and the shooting emphasized the wider rise in racism and violence against Asian Americans over the past year. He said it didn't have anything to do with that. He said that they weren't racially motivated, and that he had a sex addiction, and that he saw the spas as a temptation that he wanted to eliminate. So, I mean, is it a hate crime? The argument of any crime is, you know, a crime of hate. But this, to get this to be a particular hate crime, I don't know. That's tough to prove. When he said in his own words, it wasn't. So, okay. I mean, I'm very sorry for all these victims. Very sorry. But I don't know that you get a hate crime out of this. Specifically when he said after his arrest, it wasn't. It was a sex addiction. It didn't have anything to do with the race. So, anyway, that's where I'm leaving it. So, I know. This story keeps making the rounds the last few days, and I've had it in my pile, in the fat pile, and I'm not sure what to make of it. The guy, Reza Baluchi, and his floating contraption, you know, the hamster wheel that washed ashore on the Florida coast in Flagler County. His goal was to run from Florida to Bermuda. He's in this hamster wheel, and he was running it for charity, money for homeless people, and he wanted to raise money for the Coast Guard and raise money for the police department, raise money for the fire department. They're in public service. They do it for safety. They help other people. We love it. And he wanted to, you know, he's tried this, I don't know, a couple of times before. He was rescued from the floating bubble near St. Augustine, Florida, in 2014 and 2016. He was rescued off the Jupiter, Florida, in a hydropod. So this time I think he thought he got it right. And the answer to that is no. He didn't. I guess he has everything he needs to survive for days and weeks in his hamster wheel. He's got food, got water. He has everything to keep him safe. And he's trying to make it happen. And he wants to show people that they can do anything they want to do. Don't listen to anyone. Chase your dreams. Unless you want to ride a hamster wheel from Florida to New York, because you can't do that. You can try. You can certainly try, but every time you do try, you're going to wash up on shore in Florida. So that's the same state you started in, and you're not gonna make it past that. At least you haven't, but he keeps trying, and I know that he's trying to raise money for all people, homeless people, Coast Guard, police department, fire department, all people that are in public service. Well, I mean, the homeless people aren't in public service. But, you know, the Coast Guard, the police department, the fire department, they do it for safety and they help other people. So we want to thank them by raising money for them. And I'm going to do it by walking on water in a bubble that's a hamster wheel. And I'm going to try to go from Florida to New York. I'm not going to be able to ever in the last 7 years, but I'm going to keep on trying. I'm going to keep on trying. It does seem to be a futile effort, but and it's the guy's still going, so good for him, right? No, good for him. So are you ready to have your brain read? I am not, but I mean, I can joke around about it and say, well, you know, yes, I am. Well, scientists are using brain implants to read patients' minds. Oh, okay. Now, we know that Elon Musk predicted his Neuralink brain implant would eventually allow people to bypass human language with a handful of AI-powered chips, you know, put into your brain. Now, the Neuralink users, you know, according to Elon, could converse with their thoughts alone. And he talked to, and in one interview, he talked about how language could possibly be gone because people would be able to communicate very quickly with far more precision. Now, he talks now of just solving brain injuries. And remember, that's what he did when he had the monkey have the brain implant and then played Pong and ended up playing brain Pong, right? Or mind Pong or whatever they wanted to call it. But they, you know, it showed that his implant was working. Well, a team at the University of California, San Francisco, these neuroscientists surgically implanted a subdural electrode array on the surface of a stroke victim's brain. For 81 weeks, they fed his sensor motor cortex signals into an artificial intelligence system. I love the fact that we know the sensor motor cortex signals into the system, and using the algorithm's predictive power as a sort of autocomplete feature, the team was able to translate the subject's attempts at speech into text with, according to them, extraordinary accuracy. Now, they claim that right now they're limited to a 50-word vocabulary. The silent patient is able to string together full sentences, which are displayed on screen in real time. A few examples: here is my computer, my family is very comfortable, they have faith, faith is good. We'll see. The experiment was supported by Project Steno, which is a long-term program funded and supported by Facebook. One of the project's broader goals was to create a non-invasive helmet that would translate the average user's thoughts into digital information. Oh, that's good. But when we go back to helmets, that's what I said all along needs to happen. And Facebook, of course, is working on it. I mean, we need to, instead of the phone in our hand, instead of the watch on our wrist, instead of the laptop in front of us, and we just need to wear a helmet, like the space helmets. And the screen on the face, the screen on the helmet is your computer screen. And you can see that's your screen, that's your life screen. You can go live looking outside through the screen, and then along the sides you have all the information you need, and you can choose which you want to bring up and bring full screen or minimize it. Or you can, you know, if you can't lift the screen up, if the technology now, the beginning technology, if you just want, you know, that old technology when you had the helmet with just the glass on the front, you know, the visor glass that you couldn't even pick up and breathe fresh air. Yeah, we don't make those anymore. But that would be, if we are looking at the future of the aliens that, you know, some of the aliens that are being drawn that we're seeing from the future, that, you know, that has one eye, that's kind of what you're looking at, right? If we were to land somewhere with our space helmets on, that's what we would look like. Just something with this one giant eye. But inside that eye would be our information. We would be connected to everything, and you're able to speak, you have a microphone, you're able to talk to whoever you're connected with, and you have information real-time screen in front of you. That's what we need to do, and that's what they're working on. They want to create a non-invasive helmet. Yeah, that. But now they are also working on it being able to translate your thoughts into digital information. Oh, but what Facebook is probably hoping for is that if they can get you to put this non-invasive helmet on and they're able to translate your thoughts into digital information, then they'll be able to have the digital information reversed back to your thoughts. And they'll know exactly what you're thinking when you're thinking it. Huh? I know. I mean, the doctors are talking about, they've learned so much about how speech is processed in the brain, but it's only in the last 5 years that advances in machine learning have allowed us to get to this key milestone. And Facebook's machine learning advice and funding really accelerated our progress. Isn't that special? Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark, for doing that. Now, Chang's results were published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And the scientists and engineers over at Neuralink are, you know, I'm sure they're probably like, hey, thanks for the information. Well, we'll be using it over here too, okay? Well, don't worry about it. I know, I mean, Elon's trying to, you know, make it happen with Neuralink as well. And he may very well do that. But when they talk about his deal, and so the original test was invasive, right? They're getting into your brain with the chips and hooking it up and with the Neuralink, whereas the Facebook deal where they're trying to, you know, do the non-invasive helmet, that's a ways off. But it's coming, and it is coming fast. And you can quote me on that. It's coming, and it's coming fast.